May 23rd, we're here to talk today about Clackamas County's bonanza in revenue in marijuana sales and how we're going to spend it. And what's from here? What are we doing from here, Don?
Yeah, so there are actually, this is kind of a bifurcated discussion because, I mean, part of it is a discussion about how we might be able to deploy those resources in a way that makes the best sense towards addressing needs in the community. But part of it also was an interest on the part of the Board of County Commissioners to hear about the current efforts we have under the current local laws that the county has adopted and the state statutes to carry out our fiduciary and enforcement capabilities and responsibilities to make sure that this enterprise that we're now newly engaged in and learning a lot about is being conducted and undertaken in the best and most productive possible way for the public. And so we've got a team of individuals representing our code enforcement responsibilities, our Health, Housing, and Human Services Department, the Sheriff's Office, and the District Attorney's Office, and we've also been fully engaged in working with County Council. Dan, are you going to take the lead point, and then what I'd like you to do is to introduce the folks here?
You blessed me with this opportunity to take the lead point. I am so excited to be doing so. Good morning. Dan Johnson, Director of Transportation and Development. I am pleased to be joined to my right here by Rich Swift from H3S, Chris Owens from the District Attorney's Office, and to my left, Captain James Rhodes from Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. We are here today, unless you have been living under a rock, we are here today to have a discussion about the legalization of marijuana and the impacts it's having on our service provision. Obviously, we've been taking work to kind of advance, taking steps to advance kind of this emerging industry because there are a lot of components to that are focused around economic development, et cetera. But also it's creating challenges for us, challenges around regulation, enforcement, community and neighborhood acceptance, increased exposure, and ease of access to juvenile youth, all of things that are of concern to us and the board as well. We're here to talk about this. I think first and foremost it's kind of important to identify the fact that the state of Oregon, as it relates to the legalization and regulation of recreational marijuana and medical marijuana, take the lead in a lot of that regulatory authority. And for the sake of the record, recreational marijuana is regulated by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, OLCC. Medical marijuana is regulated by the Oregon Health Authority, OHA. Hemp, another byproduct, is regulated by the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Having said that, we play a pretty significant role in this new world around marijuana. Over the last 4 years, we have worked collaboratively and collectively to kind of develop policies that reasonably support the market while also meeting the needs of our community and our citizens. Just briefly, as you can tell by the four individuals that are sitting up here representing the four departments, kind of the majority of the services around our either regulatory authority or diversion and prevention efforts fall in one of four divisions, which is DTD. We have a lot of work focused on the permitting of these facilities, also code enforcement and prevention, Health, Housing, Human Services on the prevention side, Sheriff's Office, obviously within law enforcement, and then District Attorney's Office with prosecution. So today we're here to talk to you, I know before we get into the discussion about our roles, I want to highlight the fact that in the packet that you received, there is the staff report, there is attachment A, which is the spreadsheet, has a discussion about some of the tax revenue, which we'll be discussing in 1 second. Attachment B is a whopping, I think, 11 pages long. Attachment B is a discussion about current situations and our proposals, which we'll be referring to. And attachment C provides the board with some highlights and information about what the state's role is in regards to the regulatory role around marijuana. Let's start with the fact that there's revenue. There is revenue associated with this discussion. As all of you are members of the Budget Committee for Clackamas County, you are aware there is a pending policy-level proposal that's before the Budget Committee currently. It's for approximately $1.2 million. Those are revenues the county expects to receive around two specific funding sources. One is the county's marijuana tax, which is at 3% on all retail sales tax. And also, it's a portion of the state sales tax, which is about 17%, which the county receives a portion of. In addition, there are additional revenues that were availed and provided to the county back for fiscal year 16-17, which are included in the spreadsheet that you see before you as Attachment A. So, a couple things. We're here to kind of inform the dialogue around that policy-level proposal. It's kind of a placeholder right now. We wanted to share this information with you before in front of the Budget Committee, what we think we would like to propose for additional services and how to allocate those funds. We'd like to provide you kind of a dialogue around what the current condition is around marijuana and the issues that we are facing as we move forward on this topic. And in addition, provide some dialogue around what our proposals may be and how we move forward to provide additional suite of services that we would look to provide to the citizens of Clackamas County. A couple things, I've asked everybody to kind of keep their proposals to like 10 minutes or less. We're all going to go through and kind of give a brief description of what we're facing and what we'd like to propose. I guess I would ask if we can kind of hold questions to the extent feasible till the end. We want to provide like at least 45 minutes to an hour for kind of a Q&A session at the end. Our concern is that if we get sidetracked on one of these that we may not have enough time to finish. And we know your schedules are very important. With that, I don't want to even ask if there's a question because that would totally deflate the dialogue.
I do want to maybe add a comment. I may allow a little participation from the audience. So we might want to set a couple, 15 minutes aside and give people a minute or so to say something.
We'll look to you when you look to provide that time. So with that, we're going to jump into DTD, and we're just going in the order in which it's outlined on Attachment C, Department of Transportation Development. So we have three primary components where we touch service delivery as it relates to marijuana and the marijuana industry. One is our Land Use Permitting and Planning Department. Congratulations, you were the first state you were the first county in the state of Oregon to adopt kind of time, place, and manner provisions around the retail sales of marijuana throughout our county. To date, we've got about 311 land use applications that have been submitted. They deal with everything from processing to retail sales. We will be very open, honest, and transparent about the fact that there have been tweaks on these standards, and there will continue to be tweaks on these standards. Those tweaks in regards to the land use requirements have not only been at the state level to deal with changes they see in the marketplace or concerns they didn't address originally, and or new issues that arise, because this market is obviously very new to a lot of us. Our assumption is we're going to continue to see these tweaks, that we're going to vet through our long-range work program, and these are by tweaks, I mean changes to our land use policies and procedures. We continue to vet those through our long-range planning work program. We continue to assume they're going to be very highly controversial, requiring significant staff resources. So you will see on the list of proposals, on Attachment A, we have requested about $64,000. That's for an additional half of an FTE. That half of an FTE would essentially assist with code amendments, responding to inquiries from the public, and obviously that discussions with the board and our partnering agencies. I do want to do a kind of a shout-out or acknowledgement. There's no request associated with this, but another area which we touch the dialogue around marijuana is our building codes division. We have seen a significant uptick in kind of this new emerging industry and what it's meant to structural changes and how they work that into the various codes they administer. We have been able to manage those costs within the current programmatic structure of building codes. Those are dedicated funds, so we are not requesting any additional money at this time for that particular division. Traffic safety. The problems of impaired drivers continue to grow. I'm going to read some stats here, and these are found in your information. But according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the number of self-reporting marijuana users nationwide increased by 7,000 per day in 2014. That's before the legalization in these various states that you see around the area, especially Oregon. Nighttime and weekend use for drivers under the influence also is growing. Obviously marijuana, well, maybe not obviously, but marijuana is the drug that's most often linked to a drug driving issue. So versus drugged. We have the Drive to Zero program. All of you, it's near and dear to all of you. You've all been informed about that. And it has a mission to eliminate fatal and serious injury crashes, including those attributed to the influence of drugs. So some of the issues that we see related to marijuana-impaired driving. About a third of the teens and a quarter of the parents of licensed teen drivers think it's legal to drive under the influence of marijuana. In states that permit the recreational use. So you have some uneducated assumptions that are out there. Obviously, this is a misconception. In addition, the behavior does not stop with the youth. In 2016, the national surveys are showing that of drivers 18 years and older, they found that they believe that driving after the use of marijuana is not perceived as negatively impacting their driving ability and or impacting their ability less than alcohol. So our proposal with our Drive to Zero program would be to engage in a preventative campaign along the lines of some of the work they're already doing now. To educate drivers about the risk of impaired driving and encourage safety options. The goal of the campaign would be to reinforce the fact that driving under the influence of marijuana is illegal and has significant negative impacts. We'd encourage pre-planning for drive and ride options and educate about the effects of driving under the influence and stress the importance of restricting access to medical or access to marijuana, to the adults, not minors. We're looking for $25,000 of funding associated with that. Last and not least, we have code enforcement, and I have 1 minute. Code enforcement is, obviously, you know the work of code enforcement in and around the county. We enforce codes about every code that we have that's implemented by county code. We enforce that. I want to be clear, though, the codes that we are enforcing are codes around building services, zoning, land use, et cetera. The work of our code enforcement team is not around illegal activity, and that's where our work in coordinating with the sheriff's office and the district attorney's office is important to us if and when we find illegal activity is occurring. We have seen, unlike a lot of the code enforcement items that are facing our group today, a highly emotionally charged issue. It has a social stigma to it, continues to inform the public expectations and demand for enforcement on these as timely and as quickly as possible. Keep in mind the things that we are enforcing primarily relate to operational components of these facilities: odor control, light, security, noise, waste management, separation distance, water. It's that time, place, and manner components that fall within code enforcement. I would like to assure the board that we continue to work with Clackamas County Sheriff's Office collaboratively on these various topics. We are also working collaboratively with the state of Oregon. As you know, when we discussed marijuana and our role in the marijuana code enforcement, we've done this a couple of times. There was a desire from the board to make sure that we were notifying the state, not only OHA, but also OLCC, of any code enforcement issue we have on any particular property, which we are doing so currently. Unfortunately, those state agencies have some difficulty in sharing information with us, which causes some problems. We are also finding that kind of the way the state has segmented those regulatory bodies between Department of Ag, OHA, OLCC is causing some difficulties as well, kind of separation of services, because they kind of have their niche areas that they're working on. But I'm going to affirm the board that we are following through with our commitment to you to inform them of everything moving forward on a code enforcement issue to the state. To increase the resources available to address this demand, we do have within that Exhibit A and accompanying documents a request for one additional FTE dedicated almost primarily to code enforcement issues associated with marijuana. It has a startup cost of about $184,000. It has an ongoing cost of about $132,000, which we've shared with you in the information packets that you have before you today. So with that, that's a kind of a quick summary of DTD. I'm going to hand it over to Rich to kind of have a brief dialogue or a dialogue around the impacts that H3S is finding.
Sure. Okay, thank you, Dan. Richard Swift with Health, Housing, and Human Services. So the key components for us are going to be essentially two focuses. It's prevention and it's education. So the prevention side is focused on use for those under the age of 21. This is something that is in the state illegal, and I've got my partners to my left who are going to be helping with that piece of it. in the county, and then also, you know, so that's one piece of the prevention. The other piece of the prevention is educating youth to the effects and impacts of marijuana use, and also with a big focus on actually preventing use and educating regarding brain development and the fact that really it's not a good idea to be using this product on a regular basis anywhere before the age of 26. Why 26? Because that's, as science tells us, that is when, for the males, brain development, for the large part, is done. Marijuana use, as is shown, does impact brain development. For women, you know, the development there is usually done 24 and younger, and so it is just not recommended. The other side of the science, and this is where, you know, for my department, you know, a lot of times we are given large bags of lemons, and we have to figure out the better side of what to do with it. And so we're pretty good at making lemonade. So the other side of this is actually, because there is some potential medicinal use for marijuana, that there will be some good science coming out of this, and that is actually the one piece of this that I'm hopeful on. So we will be focused on some internal coordination, and also this cuts across, and we will be using this for essentially prevention regarding drugs and education regarding drugs, because as also the board knows, we are being significantly impacted by opioid use in the county. That is, you know, essentially a crisis and a disaster for us right now. And so we'll be doing education across all substances, and so we'll be using some of this money for internally for our prevention coordinator, and then that's about $127,000, and then we will be using $300,000 through a NOFA, Notice of Award, RFP process out to the community, so we can work with the community across schools in prevention and education, and that is essentially going to be the focus of H3S work in this area. You know, essentially what it is for us, we have a revenue source for something that we know we need to do. If it had not been legalized, we would still be doing this. And it would, you know, a little bit of our message would be different because if it had not been legalized, it would be illegal. So that would be a part of our education and prevention that is for over 21, not there anymore. For under 21, it is still intact. And so we will be doing a big, big community push across all drugs that impact our youth and any resident in the county regarding prevention and education. And so that, sort of in a nutshell, is where Health, Housing, and Human Services are going to be sitting with these dollars. The other thing, though, I do want to draw attention to, and this is not to throw the state under the bus in terms of siloing, but I think one of the approaches that we're taking that is important for us is the fact that you have DDT, the Sheriff's Office, the DA, and H3S working together on this. And we are continuing with this integration because we know that across all of our work, we've got, you know, work related to law enforcement assisted diversion, our LEAD program. We have our neighborhood livability project. So all of the, we're going to be working together across all four of us in all of those areas as it relates to not just marijuana, but also opioids and other drug activity that is impacting our communities. And so in that sense, this has been actually a really, really, really nice integrated effort on the part of four departments that, I mean, we spent a lot of time working with the DA and the Sheriff's Office, you know, and I've just had to get used to working with DDT. That's gone okay. We will get there. So, no, we are there because we've done some really good work in the housing area as well. So I will turn it over, I think, now to the Sheriff's Office.
Good morning. Again, James Rhodes, Captain with the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. Thank you for having us here today. Our portion of the proposal is to form a neighborhood response team. And ultimately what that proposal would look like is a two-person uniform deputy, uniform car out in the public team. You'll see in the proposal that it calls for because it's rather spendy, honestly. It calls for the stand-up of one deputy in the first year of the program at about the cost of $236,000, and then that cost goes down the second year, bringing on the second deputy to after year two or into year two, make a two-person team. How we envision this resource is, as Rich Swift said, this is a cooperative process, right? So all of us need to work together. That neighborhood response team ideally would be the boots on the ground resource to support this this program. So things that these deputies could do if dedicated to this neighborhood response team would be largely to supplement the existing neighborhood livability project. So this is an already existing program with wild success that involves the cooperation of H3S, DTD, code enforcement, the district attorney's office. And so a neighborhood response team would work in conjunction with them. Currently, in today's model, the sheriff's office doesn't have a full-time dedicated deputy dedicated to the neighborhood livability project, whereas the neighborhood response team, these two deputies, would provide that resource that doesn't exist today to maximize the effect of the neighborhood livability project. The challenges that are facing the sheriff's office that could be addressed by these deputies are, you know, with this, it's a new emerging market, and the voters of Oregon decided to legalize marijuana. That doesn't mean it's entirely and wholly accepted by all the members of our community. This results in a lot of conflict and calls, right? And so in general, our calls for service generate around more of the code enforcement type thing. So odor, noise, traffic associated to, and those type of things. And though those are not necessarily or always criminal acts, we would have uniform deputies who could still respond to that, to those needs. And working with the Neighborhood Livability Project, working with code enforcement and having those relationships, they could really be the initial interface for directing those concerns and complaints where they need to be. But also, there are times where there is a criminality that still occurs. There are still black market marijuana operations. There are still those operations that operate outside of Oregon's legal parameters. And then this would also be the tip of the spear, the initial law enforcement contact that could then collect the information and do the investigation that we need to look into those illegal actions, work with the district attorney's office to maximize those cases. In the other time of the day when they're not responding to these calls and doing those type of work, these neighborhood response team deputies could also work well with H3S and their prevention program. They would be a resource to facilitate presentations or outreach programs, education programs, and those type of things, and could be, again, an outward-facing entity to show up at schools and public events and have those conversations. And then lastly, one of the concerns with the emerging marijuana market is the exposure or opportunities for youth to have access, a dramatically increased opportunity for access to marijuana. This neighborhood response team could also do things like work, coordinate and operate marijuana sting operations, similar to what we have done for in conjunction with OLCC for alcohol sales, right, where we do sting operations to ensure compliance with not selling to minors and those type of things. So all in all, the proposal calls for is a two-person neighborhood response team. Again, uniformed deputies that would work wholly in conjunction with all the departments you see up here today to address, first and foremost, the initial calls and demands and needs of the community, right? And then, in addition to that, the prevention and neighborhood response and education, criminal enforcement when and where we can, and be, again, those boots on the ground.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Chris Owen. I'm Chief Deputy of the Clackamas County District Attorney's Office. I've been a prosecutor since 1993, and I've worked with the Clackamas County DA's Office since 1996. The law enforcement landscape has changed dramatically when it comes to marijuana legalization. If somebody's operating a larger scale, black market, grow, different rules apply now when it comes to search and seizure. It's not just as easy to come in and say somebody smells an overwhelming amount of fresh marijuana in front of a property. And vehicle traffic going back and forth. In the old days, that could allow you to at least get information for a search warrant and perhaps see what's going on, because these impact the livability of neighborhoods. We don't have those tools anymore. So when it comes to neighborhood livability and larger scale marijuana production, we have to be a bit more creative in our approaches. When it comes to the district attorney's office proposal, we have essentially two funding proposals, which mirror many of our other partners here. One is for LEED, which is an acronym for Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion. The second is for the Neighborhood Livability Project. I like to think of these as bookended, essentially, programs, one that focuses on the addict or the user, and that's obviously not just marijuana. That's more with opiates and with methamphetamine in targeted geographical areas. These have been successful in other jurisdictions, and I'm going to hand it over to Bill Stewart, who is our community prosecutor, in a moment, just to give you a little bit more detail. The other bookend on the other side is enhancing the Neighborhood Livability Project. We think the Neighborhood Response Team officers would be an essential supplement to this program, which has had wild success in the past, and we could wrap in a component that deals with this more creative approach we need when it comes to larger scale grows in neighborhoods, large scale marijuana grows in neighborhoods where you could get code enforcement involved, and we could be a little bit more creative in our approach when we have those situations impacting neighborhood livability. The request we are making, I'm putting the cart before the horse a little bit because I'm going to have Bill just take a couple minutes and give you a little bit more detail. For a halftime FTE as it relates to the Neighborhood Livability Project, and as well as support in relation to LEAD. I think, you know, perhaps the figure that we have in the proposal is a bit aggressive, and we don't want to take away any funds from our partners who need those in relation to LEAD. But we would certainly, we're going to be devoting time and resources from our office to support the LEAD program. Bill Stewart is our community prosecutor, has been for many years. Bill, could you, please approach the table and just give a brief summary to everybody concerning these programs?
Thank you. Again, Bill Stewart with the DA's office. The NRT team will actually supercharge our Neighbor Livability Project. To this point, we've had officers on collateral duties working on these projects. With the NRT team, with dedicated officers, we'll be much more effective and be able to address problems and respond to them more quickly. From a marijuana standpoint, as I've looked at this issue, it seems to me a type of NLP problem. You've got neighborhood issues that you really need to look at from a creative standpoint and engage partners and address those issues. This will give us the tool to do that. We can bring in the OLCC, we'll work with land use, we'll work with code enforcement, and really attack where we have problems that are both code enforcement and criminal. From a standpoint of LEAD, this will give us a chance to address those folks that are engaging in criminal behavior because of their drug addiction. So far on an NLP, when we close down a drug house, we're sometimes left with, we end up pushing them out of the problem house, which is great for that neighborhood, but sometimes they simply go to the next place. LEAD gets case management services to them on the street in a way that offers the opportunity to address that and pull them out of that lifestyle. That's all I have, unless you have any questions at this point.
Are we ready for questions?
One quick, hold on one second. Before we get to questions, I just want to make sure, when you look at the spreadsheet before you, you're going to notice words like contingency down there. I mean, one of the things I want to talk about is we are getting estimates from David Bodwave in finance, and his crystal ball is good, but not always great. Expect perfection, so I assume there may be some flex in this funding. So I want to make sure you're aware of that, and so once we get a confirmation on the exact amount of available funds, we didn't push the envelope too much to maximize all the dollars that are available, and there could be a discussion of future data about additional services based on how these revenue trends either go up, or assuming they're going to go up.
So I'm going to kind of start. One thing is on officers. I assume we're not going to go outside the agency and have 2 years training before the officer's ready to go.
I'm sorry. So if you're asking about funding them for the roughly 19 months it takes them, no, this would be that's not the ask. The ask is that the funding would be an FTE that would be filled from existing resources.
Okay. So sometimes there is a question whether one is legal versus illegal. I assume somebody can look that up when somebody calls and says, yeah, there's a marijuana grow next door, they're illegal. I assume we can look that up because it's not appropriate for a code enforcement person to go up to a house that could be illegal by themselves when an officer should probably be there. So is there a way to look that up? to identify that person as being legal or illegal before our code enforcement guy? I see some nods.
Oh, I know. Everybody's excited to come talk. Hang on. Tap the brakes. Legal or illegal? We have the ability to go within our system and to have dialogue with the state on whether or not they are registered and or have a land use authority to do a certain use. Make sure I'm looking at the right people. Okay, thank you so much. Beyond that, in regards to the legality of the use, anybody want to expand on that?
When it comes to legality of the use, and I prepared this, this is as far as the amount of marijuana you can legally produce or possess, and these are the penalties associated with it as well. I think I may have given you too many there, but
official,
hand that over to you. It's a little bit more difficult, and that's why I talked about this more creative approach, because somebody can smell marijuana, a lot of fresh marijuana being grown next door, and it might be a completely legal grow, and that's why you need code enforcement and land use knowledge and everybody communicating together versus a black market grow, which is, you know, somebody's growing 150, 200 plants and just kind of selling out of their house or transporting it out of state. Just that smell is not going to be enough to get a search warrant, but at least if you have that communication with code enforcement, they're going to say, okay, this, you know, there are no permits here, that, you know, and you can go ahead and at least start that journey down determining whether it is actually an unlawful grow.
Yeah, but the problem is the neighbor may smell it. It could be legal, but right, somebody's going to go in and count the plants or see how many are dried or how many pounds. And just go ahead.
I think when we actually develop this program, we'll identify a complaint. We'll look in the database and find out where they are with the OLCC and with the OHA for the medical marijuana stuff, and then we'll actually roundtable it within our NRT team now, or the new version of the NLP, where we'll actually look at code issues, land use, all those things, and identify what are the problems, what are the avenues for us to address the neighborhood complaints. But we will have that partnership with the state agency to help tell us that, if it's legal or non-legal.
It's intended to just be a thoughtful approach as opposed to just, we smell marijuana, let's go kick down some doors.
So I've been listening to a lot of conversation on the radio about land use applications, and some counties are no longer accepting them, and I don't know if that's something we can do, but 311 applications, that means still waiting to be processed, I assume? Or, no, does somebody know that? Are they waiting to be processed?
No, I believe those fall into a couple of those.
So the 311 fall into a couple different categories. I didn't get into the specific detail of what the breakdown was, but right now we've got 229 that are kind of in the production and growing component. We do land use compatibility statements, which is basically an assessment of, is it a legal, viable use within that zone? It's about 65 of those. Retailing, 11. And then processing, we have 6 for processing.
So the question is, these are already processed, or
they're pending?
No, they're processed.
Okay, so, and I'm looking over there, and maybe over there, Nate or Stephen, can we as a county not accept any more applications right now? No. And that's state law. We have to accept the applications. Okay. Because I noticed some. So sometimes they talk about different counties, and they happen to be the same name as other counties. Benton County in Washington versus Benton County in Oregon. So I had to wait for the whole thing to talk through. So we're pretty much screwed on that.
Well, I'm just curious what it is about state law where we couldn't, as a county, say we're just going to put a moratorium on accepting any more applications. And why can't we? Would we need to go to the legislature and change something? Is that a...
Nate or Stephen?
We can opt out.
We're running out of microphones.
I can. Yeah, I'll get up. I'm good.
Nate Boderman, Assistant County Counsel. You'll recall several years ago that there was quite a bit of discussion surrounding this notion of opt-out. And state law does provide for the options for cities and counties to opt out of what's essentially the state marijuana program. And what that requires is a vote of the people in even-numbered year elections, if I'm recalling correctly, in the general elections, which is November of even-number years. So we do have one of those coming up. And we asked the board, gosh, I believe it was about a year ago, again, this request for opt-out was brought back up again, and I believe it was the direction of the board to continue forward with time, place, and manner regulations, which is the other option that counties have to essentially regulate the marijuana licenses that are being issued by OLCC and OHA. So that's what the board's direction was as of, gosh, a year or so ago.
Okay, but so what about a moratorium isn't saying you can't do it anymore. It says, let us get caught up. Let's say Oregon City had a moratorium on building new buildings because they didn't have enough sewer capacity, let's say. We're still addressing capacity in all these departments. Why not a moratorium?
So there's very specific requirements for building moratoriums under state law. Again, whole different discussion, but we're talking about capacity issues here. You have to make very specific findings for that. Moratoriums are limited durations, so there's obviously very strict circumstances under which you can impose a moratorium, and again, limited duration for specific purposes.
Paul.
Don't know where to begin. So which one, before we let this go, we opt out, ask for a vote, but the existing businesses are grandfathered in, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so that's, I want to make sure everyone understands that.
Yeah, and just before we go on to all your list of questions on this topic, do you mind? I mean, it seems that, I don't know if I was on the board when this was discussed because I don't have a particular memory of deciding this, but we have more information now than we did a year ago about how much marijuana is entering the black market. And I just think we have a different, we have more knowledge now to make different decisions, and we should look at everything.
So I'll start with the very simple one. I'm looking at the administrator and some of our staff here, is that in the packet there really are no measurable outcomes for these dollars. And I think it's policy level proposals, and they're broken out ideally. They're not broken out, they're all lumped together with the 1.2 price tag. But I'd like to see measurable outcomes out of all of these. The history, so with that said, I'm going to go to the history. So the history of what we were promised with 91 and what the enforcement was going to be and the state's role and our role and everything, I think we were led down the path of belief that we would see three times the amount of money here today, 2 to 3 times the amount of money. We have $2-3 million without implementing our 3%, and that the state would be enforcing, and that there would be enforcement dollars and so on. So that hasn't really been lived up to, along with a whole plethora of things that have just frankly failed us miserably. So, and I know that no one's going to have the answer to this question, but I think it's something I want to plant the seed. As opposed to how much we got and what we're going to throw at it, with or without any measurable results, what's it really costing us today from staff time? How much time is the sheriff's office spending right now as a result of this? And frankly, love the sheriff's office. James, don't take any of this personal. Any of the staff up here take anything personal to say, but I think there's a lot of pent-up frustration in this room from my standpoint and people I talk to and people that aren't even in this room, that the sheriff's office, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, and it could be a result, really, of what you already spoke to, James, is that they almost have immunity, whether they're black market or whether they're completely permitted, right? That they actually apply for the state process, they actually have a license, they have immunity. It's crazy. And the sheriff's office, and it's not a criticism, but from the perception and from the public out there that I talk to, is totally ineffective, can't do anything. So I think the question is, what's different? Why should we throw any more money at it? Because the sheriff's office was actually, and you said it, you were right, was more effective before 91 passed at doing that, and you were spending resources. You had staff that were doing marijuana and all kinds of illegal activities at the time. So my my situation here, if there's no measurable outcomes, what's different? And why should we spend another penny if it's not going to do anything? So having that said, Dan, your department, code enforcement, you probably don't have the answer, but I'd certainly like to know, how much does it cost us right now? How much time are we out there at these facilities? I just got another contact about another situation with the fan issue in Captain Colton with the fans, because the temperature's heating up, that now what wasn't supposed to happen is happening.
Fans coming.
Okay. How effective are we going to be with these dollars? And what's it really costing us? And is this a zero-sum game? Are we actually losing money? What are we doing on behalf of the citizens of this county to make sure? Because if we're only getting one point, if we only have 1.2 to throw around, it's already costing us, just I'm going to guess, $1 million, maybe $2 million that we're already expending currently. Should we consider really opting out mm-hmm. of this? Commissioner Fisher and I, a couple nights ago, were at the high school, mm-hmm. And they had their own project, and they just chose to take a task, and I think a majority of them were all about
marijuana substance abuse,
alcohol, tobacco, marijuana, so on. How many IQ points you go down if you smoke marijuana? I mean, probably not much different than it was before 91 passed, frankly. But maybe now it's more, maybe at a heightened state. But the fact is, I remember when I was in high school, drugs was a big deal then. And to Rich's point, how effective are you going to be with those dollars? Because we've been educating the students in school for decades about drug use. So I want to know how effective we're really going to be. And the DA's office, how effective under the constraints that both law enforcement and yourselves as far as prosecution, how effective can you really be? I have great respect. I'm a big, big fan of the work of the NLP, Bill Stewart's work. Code enforcement, the collaboration with Sarah McClurg, awesome. You guys are doing fantastic. But this is a different animal, big time. These are people that are well-funded, typically. Black market or permitted, they're well-funded. You have the constraints, which we're already acknowledging that are there. And so I'm not sure how effective the NLP will be on that. And again, my question is, what are really the measurable outcomes of 1.2, whether it's one time or ongoing and so forth? So I have really have concerns that we should not really be. And frankly, we were the first county to implement,
rules and regulations. Yeah, time, place, and manner.
Time, place, and manner. I want to say rules and regs, but that wasn't it. Time, place, and manner. And frankly, so you create these hurdles, and, you know, our gifted attorneys and people find a way to go under the hurdle, over the hurdle, around the hurdle, right? And so we could spend money there, and frankly, we're just chasing, really, the problem. We're not really going to solve anything. So I don't think that spending a whole lot of time, we lost several years in our planning work up at Indiana ZDOs dedicated towards marijuana. We lost ground. And I don't think we're necessarily in any kind of a better place than we were then or we are now than we were then. So if there's no measurable outcome, I think that the board has to really consider really what to do. And I'm hearing from commissioners in other counties. I understand about the Josephine County lawsuit and the potential of that. I don't think that we should be banking the money per se, but I'm just really wondering about an overall strategy. And this is really important to understand, is that what are the measurable outcomes going to be? And what's different from a law enforcement standpoint? What's different from a code enforcement standpoint? Because all those situations are just as noisy as they were before. I think we can talk to a lot of these communities that have had these problems, and they're probably not going to tell you it's a whole lot better, or that it's even currently acceptable under their current predicament.
Well, I don't know what opt out would do for us. We're stuck with all the ones that are here. That all that would mean is we would have no revenue to enforce those.
Well, what it would mean,
Chair,
with all respect, it, what it would mean is it would be a further proliferation of more and more applications, more and more growing. You know, the other thing I didn't really talk about is our conflicts of land use. I mean, we want to beat up on solar panels,
yeah,
right? They don't draw any water out of the ground. But we're using a tremendous amount of water to grow this crop around the state, and we're not even being cognizant of that. And we shut down development because of fear of dropping the water table. What are we doing with marijuana? We're silent.
And it's on farmland.
We are so inconsistent.
Not using the soil.
And I think the message we're sending to our youth is, it's legal for mom and dad to do it because they're over 21. So, you know, really, you know, I think I was raised with lead by example. And I'm not going to lead the younger generation to say, you know what, I'm 21, so I'm going to smoke or I'm going to drink excessively. I'm going to do all these drugs, whether illicit or whether or legal. If it's a bad thing, it's a bad thing. And that's just my opinion. I know that everyone has different opinions about marijuana use. But I do appreciate the folks that are legitimate in the industry. I want to just acknowledge that there are people that are, you know, doing the best they can to be good neighbors, to run a clean operation, to be legitimate. And I want to acknowledge that they are doing what they're doing. But these other problems, the magnitude of this, they're the minority, in my opinion, or at least from my perspective. They're the minority.
Ken.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm just curious, are they going to respond? I would love.
Okay, let's hear a response first.
If I can just interject, and I won't take too much time so other people can weigh in. The NLP has demonstrated measurable outcomes as far as the number of houses, problem houses that have been shut down. And I think, and those are excellent questions, and you should demand accountability from the programs you put money behind. When it comes to the marijuana piece of NLP that's been proposing, it's not, we come back in and say, oh, well, there were a couple meetings we had about this house or that house. Everything would be tracked, and you have a right to evaluate those after a year and say, is this having a success or impact, or is it not? Because you're right, you shouldn't be wasting that money on a program that hasn't demonstrated itself to be effective. So we can have some level of measurable outcomes, but when you have the neighborhood response team officers working with code enforcement, and then the DA's office who has ties potentially with the federal government who have announced their priorities regarding locally in the District of Oregon when it comes to black market marijuana enforcement, we can be a bit more creative with our approach, because otherwise you have a situation where an officer on the road gets a call, I smell a lot of marijuana at this house next door to me, and the officer's got 19 calls backing up and doesn't really have the tools to deal with it. Here you offer more tools to deal with this neighborhood livability issue, and then hopefully dealing with larger black market issues, so we can get these people who are, you, as you correctly identified, completely covered in many areas of the law, even the illegal operations. They have a lot of cover by the, you know, in the loopholes of the law that make it hard to investigate.
And to echo what he said, I think the intended outcome is to provide the service to the public, right? And so I think whichever way we measured it today, it's insufficient. The public today, when they call about these concerns, are not, I concur with you, are not getting the response, the desired outcomes that they want. And so to any degree that we can increase that and measure that would be a good, positive, measurable outcome. The easier ones to do that right now would be the Neighborhood Livability Project. Those homes that we're talking about, that's not just the sole function of Neighborhood Livability Project, these homes that are in probate and such and become a nuisance. But there's other nuisance problems the Neighborhood Livability Program addresses as well, so like RVs on the street. And so this marijuana retail operations, production sites, and grow sites would be a measurable outcome. So, much like we would identify a home that has become a nuisance or a RV problem, this would be another measurable outcome. Today, the number is virtually zero of those retail locations, production sites that are operating illegally that we're addressing. Right? So those are highly measurable. In addition to this, we still have an interagency task force that works high-level drug investigations, and we measure those outcomes. And we measure them in things like monetary drug traffic organizations dismantled, pounds of marijuana seized, as well as other drugs, money and proceeds seized. In relation to marijuana, that number is virtually zero today. We seized last year 406 pounds of methamphetamine and virtually no marijuana. Right, so that's an outcome that we can measure. You would see if we were effective at dismantling these large-scale operations, there's where you could see you're measurable about the increases in assets seized, marijuana seized, drug organizations taken down. So I'm sorry that I didn't speak to those in my proposal earlier, or in my presentation today. But those would be the measurable outcomes, right? And all of these would be working in conjunction, again, with our partners up here today. And that's really where the difference would be. When we have these dedicated resources and this commitment to work together, that would allow us to overcome many of the hurdles that we have today, as the district attorney spoke to. Whereas before, neighbor calls, I smell marijuana, and that's enough reasonable suspicions for us to begin doing what we do. Today, we don't, in the world that we live in, law enforcement, our hurdles are reasonable suspicion, probable cause, these burdens. Well, when we legalized marijuana, the odor no longer gets us there, right? Or the sound of fans, that doesn't get us there. Where before, that allowed us to initiate a criminal investigation. Now we need to be more creative, as Chris Owen said. This cooperative effort with all of the partners that see up here today would allow us to work in conjunction with what is a code enforcement, a compliance issue, may become a criminal issue, right? And then we would be hand-in-hand sharing information shoulder-to-shoulder and in an opportunity to demonstrate these results that I'm talking about.
I'm going to be the guy that says it. I think that all of us, I mean, first and foremost, you got to realize the fact that this is approved by the vote of the people. I don't think any of us are excited to be up here talking about this new gray area around marijuana. I think the topics that you bring up are good. Measurable outcomes, we measure everything. You know, performance clackamas, we measure a number of code enforcement violations. We do more refinement on that, to give you more measures and more deliverables in regards to what those outcomes are. I can't predict what they might be, but I can at least tell you next budget cycle what we've seen with the use of those dollars. No ifs, ands, or buts about that. Secondly, I'm going to talk about the land use dialogue for 1 second. This is new. And there are new things every day that we get hit with that are things that we didn't even consider an impact being. And I think it's as long as we take those considerations. For example, in our work program right now, we're having the dialogue around this condominium dialogue around licenses, something we didn't even comprehend would be a viable nuance to that marketplace. We're going to adjust our code, have a dialogue about modifying our code and moving that discussion and changing that forward in our land use provisions. Last but not least, on the code enforcement end, I want to make sure we speak specifically to the comments that you brought up about the fans. You, the efforts that you see with the dollars that are dedicated as a part of this money request are to do specialized training with a specific individual that would focus solely on code enforcement, on marijuana-related code enforcement. What you see from all of us up here is a discussion about how we provide more specified service delivery towards marijuana. That would include sound equipment, audio equipment. How do we go out there, take some of that rural responsibility off the sheriff's office? Because I don't need the sheriff's office out there with a sound meter. Why don't we go out there and do that? That's silly. You know, it's a better use of our time and our experience. So it's how do we work more efficiently and effectively together to kind of get more, to cover more, and also to use our services more effectively to move forward the discussion on. I'd rather have his folks out there, you know, busting down doors and doing all that stuff they need to do rather than spending time responding to noise complaints, which we can respond to now with some of the requests we have in here. We actually, in the request, it's audio equipment training associated with that, so we can follow up on that. So I'm going to make sure you need that.
I guess you want
to. You know, so in listening to this conversation, I think one of the things for me is that I'm thankful that I actually do not have to. My wheelhouse is not concerned with land use or code enforcement, so I'm thankful for that. I because it's clearly very complex and there's a lot of frustrations around this. And related to, you know, measurement in terms of our work, we were already in the work of the Neighborhood Livability Project. We have been actually programming the law enforcement assisted diversion for some time now in working with the sheriff's office and the DA. And we will be measuring that. And we will be looking at the number of people on the streets that we are contacting, case managing, and moving from living on the streets into housing. Related to prevention education, we are actually already measuring that. So the reality of these dollars for Health, Housing, and Human Services is they have actually alleviated some financial pressure for us. So in that sense, I am thankful for the revenue coming out of this. The other piece in terms of public policy, when we look at overall impacts and we start talking about consistency and impacts to the health of our communities, the reality is if I'm going to rank and I look at things that are legal versus illegal, alcohol is the winner in terms of cost to our community for usage and what it means in terms of loss of productivity, healthcare issues. It hand down, it wins. You start ranking below that, you move into opioid, you move into other legal activities, and marijuana falls below. So from the aspects of what my department is responsible for, marijuana is there, but in terms of the things that keep me awake at night, is not necessarily one of those. However, it is an issue for the residents of our community, and we need to embrace that issue and figure out how do we move into something that is of balance regarding usage impacts and education and prevention. So we will continue measuring what we're measuring, and as we stand up LEED, which I'm extremely excited about, and you're absolutely correct, the Neighborhood Liberty Project has been awesome. I mean, it's given us some things to think about that we would not have necessarily been able to in terms of returning homes that are derelict back into useful residents and looking at potentially moving folks into those homes who might be able to establish some home equity and ownership that would not have otherwise been able to do so before. So there is really some outstanding innovative thought. And so I'm not, I don't present the types of complexities that the other departments here in front of you are presenting, because we actually have been involved in this in one way or another for quite a while now. So thank you.
And if I can just echo what Rich said, as far as measuring outcomes, we will have it down to the person when it comes down to LEED. Number of people contacted, people who follow through with services with H3S, mm-hmm. following through with recidivism or doing that. And we put a substantial carrot in front of them. You go ahead and you go do this, we're not going to prosecute. Now we save these for lower level chronic homeless offenders who also impact neighborhood livability as well. And so that's why I discuss these kind of the bookend. It's one is the addict, the other is the people impacted by it. So just to echo what Rich said, when it comes to performance measurements, we're going to be very specific, and we do have a robust structure in place to measure what is going on.
Just a quick comment is that the sheriff's office and the DA's office are the two departments that have not yet got the performance Clackamas. I think maybe you guys are underway correctly.
We began that last week.
And the district attorney's office is committed to following up with performance Clackamas as well.
So it's hard. It's even harder for me to gauge what we've done in the past mm-hmm. going forward without having any kind of mm-hmm. any kind of measurement from past practices, where we have some of that now with DTD and other departments.
Ken.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a few comments and then some questions. So bear with me. For one thing, I'd like to deal with where we are and not litigate the past, because where we are is what this proposal is all about, and how do we deal with where we are. That said, generally speaking, I support the approach that you have outlined. I want to be certain that the staffing requests that you have made are adequate. So on the Drive to Zero program, one of my questions is, you didn't ask for an FTE in that program of even a partial. Are you sure you can address that program with the staffing that you have?
Yes.
With respect to that, I know that the electronic billboards that we see on the freeways, they sell those billboards in eight-second increments. Oftentimes, they have vacant seconds that they haven't sold off. I'd suggest a conversation with the providers to see if they would do public service announcements. They could also, if they have an eight-second gap that they haven't yet sold, put that up and you use all the time on those billboards. That could be helpful. Obviously, you could still sell that time and pull down the PSA, but then when another one became vacant, they could throw it back up again and keep that going on. With respect to drug use in general, whether it's cigarettes, alcohol, marijuana, or whatever, there are some people out there, this is based on my own experience in the business, there are people out there who will never do it. They just won't. There are some who may. There are some, I can guarantee you, no matter what you say, they will. Whether it's legal or illegal, they will. The group that we need to be targeting, and I think Rich knows this, is the people who may, as much as possible and as young as possible, so that you minimize those who will. So our focus on that, I think, is critically important. with respect to the difference between adults and parents, or excuse me, adults and kids, there are a lot of areas in which adults have privileges that children do not. It's the way it is, and it's the way I believe it, that it should be, and I don't think that we need to bemoan the fact that somehow something that I do as an adult is restricted from children, and that's somehow unfair. As most people know, I prefer to have a cocktail in the evening. I'm an adult, I handle it responsibly, and that's my business. That said, I don't have the right to drive 2,000 pounds of vehicle down the road drunk, nor should I. And that moves into some of the more enforcement questions that I have. There is a perception by some in the community, this I'm addressing to the sheriff and the district attorney's office. I don't know if this perception is accurate or not, but it is a perception that exists that I believe you need to address. And that is, the DA won't prosecute if I bring a marijuana case. Or, so I don't bring you a marijuana case. That there's a lack of coordination between the two agencies on that issue. I don't know if that perception is accurate. I have not experienced it. But you should be aware of that perception. And in the process that we follow here, if we adopt this, be aggressive about addressing that. Because for any of this to work, public support is going to be critical. And you guys are going to be on the front line of it, quite frankly. So I think it's my responsibility when I hear things like that to make sure that you are aware of what that perception is. Let's see. To the budgetary issues, are we prepared, even if the income is reduced from the taxes, are we prepared to continue to support the staffing that we would potentially approve with this plan?
So if you're asking me that particular question, so that would be a question that the Budget Committee and the Board of County Commissioners would face and discuss each and every year, as we know what the projections are for the revenues for the dedicated marijuana-related revenues versus the commitments made in the budget with the general fund for any and other activities. The board would have the judgment and discretion if, for example, these revenues were reduced in future years to sequester a portion of the general fund to continue current levels that have been funded as a part of the first year, were you to do that. But that would be the judgment of the board and the budget committee over the long haul.
I just think that we need to be prepared for that discussion if the revenues go down, and if we're going to start a program, we should be prepared to fund it as long as necessary. So I'm just putting that out there, that we need to be aware of that as board members, and probably make our budget committee folks aware of it also. Bear with me for a moment, please.
You're thinking for 1 second?
Sure, go ahead.
One thing I want to draw your attention to when you look at it, attachment A, one, there's contingency built into this. It's to address the concern that there's a flux in the fund.
$165,000,
and that's probably going to be adjusted. I'm going to make sure the board understands this before this goes forward for the PLP. There will be some shift in some of these numbers. We're going to ask for an update from Mr. Bodway about the estimates he's looking at, and also some adjustments to fund some of the items we discussed today. Also, secondly, I want to draw your attention that we had this similar concern about the FTEs, because I want to make sure that you know there are FTE-related expenses and there are non-FTE-related expenses in here as well. So there could be some balancing of that depending on what those revenue projections look like in the future, so that we could take from some of the non-FTE elements and adjust those funds if and when we feel it's appropriate.
Yeah, and the other point is, if you look at the roll-up down on the bottom, there is a projection to have an ending fund balance at the end of every budget year, which gives you a ramp down opportunity were you to feel compelled to do that should revenues be reduced. So, for example, estimated at the end of this particular upcoming fiscal year, there would be an ending fund balance of almost $780,000, which kind of rolls into the beginning fund balance for the subsequent year. And it's drawn down on in the subsequent year down to $660,000. But that means you've got a bit of a buffer to be able to adjust depending on what happens with the revenue sources.
No, I'm ready. I'd like us to take a look at the increasing fines for code enforcement violations. A $55 noise fine is the cost of doing business. That just seems to me to be woefully inadequate, quite frankly. So if there's going to be consequences for bad behavior, they should be consequences that actually mean something and not just, here's a check and walk away if it's easy. So I think we need to look at that, quite frankly. I heard comment on the paperwork side of things, who's got permits, who doesn't have permits, those kinds of things. And I guess my question is, what does it take for a deputy or a code enforcement officer to, if they get a complaint from a citizen says, this piece of property is growing marijuana, we believe it to be illegal, how tough is it to figure out that they either have a permit or don't? I mean, sometimes it sounds like bureaucratic talk gets in the way of, you make a phone call either to OLCV or somebody that does process these applications and simply ask the question, does this person at this piece of property have a permit to grow marijuana? If they do not, prima facie, it would seem to me, it's illegal. How tough would it then, and you may have to be the one to answer that question, how tough is it then to get a warrant?
Probably code enforcement.
Well, I think the first question was determining whether or not the person is licensed and like having you address that first, then we can address sort of the search and seizure issues as well.
Let me speak at just a very operational level. So I called the dispatch, radio call to deputy, right?
Operational level is pretty much what a lot of people in this room are concerned with because it affects their neighborhood. And most people don't want to hear, well, I can't get the information because I don't know whether or not it's legal or we need to answer that. That question needs to be able to be answered fairly quickly.
Right.
And at that point, I'll shut up and let you say what you were going to say.
So I agree with you. And so it's not today. And part of the problem is because what this proposal is intended to fix is to break down a lot of those barriers and that siloing, right, and so that we're working closer together. Today, without a dedicated deputy sheriff assigned to these type of calls, any deputy gets this call and arrives. We don't have access to those records, right, so that is a code enforcement and DTT function. So they would ultimately get referred to DTD or code enforcement. The hope with this proposal is that if we, much like the NLP program, if we continue to work together and we have these contacts and we can share this information. For example, I mean, using the NLP as a specific operational example, those deputies in participating in that program have active lists of which houses are in the program and who to contact and what we know about what state of abatement they're in and so forth. Our partnership here would result in the same type of thing for these, we would have access to and share information because it's evolving constantly, real-time information about where the retail locations are, where the production sites are, which ones are permitted and which ones are not, and we could maximize our efficiency and get real-time answers to thank you, citizen, for the information. It turns out they're not listed. We're going to go look into it, as opposed to the current state, which is I don't have that information. I'm going to need to refer you to code enforcement. Very frustrating for the citizen. This is part of what we're aiming to fix.
And as far as the district attorney's office is concerned, certainly we can help advise up front as opposed to after the fact, particular search and seizure challenges that may exist in determining whether there is a black market or otherwise unlawful grow site. And Commissioner, just to address the one matter you referred to earlier, and I only feel compelled to give an answer to this just because of the number of citizens in the room. DA's office has no policy where we don't take unlawful marijuana cases. We will look and prosecute at anything that we can prove beyond a reasonable doubt. And we've actually, I've got the numbers, at least as far as, juveniles referred to the juvenile department as well as adult defendants referred in cases which we filed, whether they be PCS, DCS, or DCS to a minor. But you have to understand with legalization, now you have to have 16 to 32 ounces is a B misdemeanor. And if that's in a municipality, that's going to go to the municipal prosecutor's office and not our office, where pre-legalization, that would have gone to our office. In order to even get it to a felony, I can't remember the off the top of my head, it's more marijuana anybody could smoke in a lifetime. And, I mean, it's pounds and pounds and pounds of marijuana. So I just want people to know that we have no policy. You know, it's just a matter of we will look at a case, and if we reject it, it's not, oh, we don't feel like taking it. We'll reject it because perhaps there's a search and seizure issue or for some other reason we can't prove knowing, you know, possession by the particular individual who was targeted beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, the reason I phrased it the way I phrased it was I don't want to accuse.
And I didn't take it as an accusation, sir, at all. I just wanted to make sure the people in the
back here know. You folks doing your jobs. I did not want to make it as an accusation.
I didn't take it as such.
Okay. And likewise, I do appreciate the notice. I was unaware that that perception to that degree existed because I could promise you that the district attorney and the sheriff's office get along very well. I mean, we have, if we talk about our drug enforcement team, we have cross-designated deputy attorneys that are that are part of that NLP, for example. I mean, DDA Stewart in that close involvement, right? I mean, so we have lots of very cooperative working relationships. Our hope is that this proposal, if successful, would allow us to demonstrate the good work that we do together.
My last two comments are these. The proposal has a number of similarities to a proposal that some citizens who are in this room actually sent to us, and it's based on that neighborhood program. So I'm not sure if it's word for word either direction, but I think it addresses a lot of the issues. And the other is that a big concern, again, with folks that I know that are in this room, is enforcement in the rural areas. It's not just about zombie houses in the residential areas of Clackamas County. This is enforcement in the rural areas where there appears to be a lot of illegal growing going on and probably transporting from those areas out of state. And I will leave my comments at that. Thank you.
Okay, Don, and I'd like to, and then you, but we'd like to leave about 10 minutes.
Okay, I just have a quick follow-up to Ken that spurred just a quick question. So I'm just curious, and I've talked to county commissioners around the country at the WEIR conference and around the state on this issue, but how much marijuana? You say pounds and pounds more than a lifetime. Is it, like, how much is illegal?
So you can, it depends on what you're, on
the form in which it comes.
So let's just say you're just average, you know, bag of marijuana. We're not talking about plants. We're not talking about edibles, concentrates, you know, oils or anything like that. So, and I should have this committed to memory by now, but it's never good at math. That's why I'm a lawyer. So basically you can legally possess 8 ounces, you know. I may need a puppet show.
That might be the best line of the day.
Right. And so so up to 8 ounces is legal for personal possession. In order for it to be the level of B misdemeanor, which is a really low level misdemeanor.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the felony.
The felony, then.
I'm talking of crates of tomatoes that look like tomatoes being shipped out of the state.
16.
How many crates of tomatoes?
So we've got, what's 16 times 8? That's before you get it up to a felony for possession. 16, yeah.
128 ounces or pounds?
Ounces.
128 ounces.
Yeah, and so, it's a lot. And so, you know, in what pre-legalization would have been sort of per se evidence of possession with intent to distribute is just, well, you know, that's what sort of under the law you're presumed to just, you know, for personal use or, you know.
Yeah. We just know that marijuana is leaving the state, and I'm just curious about investing resources at that point, figuring out.
Right, and you know.
Where it's leaving and investing resources.
And you know, I know HIDA's coming out with or either has or is coming out with a report dealing with this issue, as well as if you saw Billy Williams, the U.S. attorney for the District of Oregon, made a recent statement about federal priorities when it comes to marijuana enforcement. He talked about the exporting issue and putting their resources there with black market. Now, the feds are frankly going to have more resources than Clackamas County in dealing with that angle. But the thing is, our prosecutor who works with the interagency task force is cross-designated as a special assistant U.S. attorney. So he does have inroads into that. And I'm not trying to say, all of a sudden he's going to become the marijuana deputy, but he just offers another level of expertise that is helpful. But those, you know, the large-scale black market, I'm sending them out to New York and to 5 other states. Frankly, the feds are going to be more equipped than us resource-wise to deal with that. We would have to rely on them. And that's why our focus is a little bit more on the livability. And then if we trip over something that is something major, we have our partners in the federal law enforcement community that we can refer them to.
Yeah. When I think of, just really quickly, what the criminality element that so affects our neighborhoods and the coordination that needs to occur between our local law enforcement and the feds and the DA for those issues, that's a pretty significant when you're talking to folks. They're concerned about how safe is it to be next to some of these operations, and they don't feel it that they're being heard at this time.
You haven't even mentioned the state police, which is the arm, the enforcement arm of what the OLCC is supposed to be utilizing.
Done.
Yes, so one of the things I wanted to make sure that folks realize is, I mean, the purpose of today is just to introduce what is essentially a placeholder.
Can't solve all the problems
in
the world?
Yeah, well, we wanted to introduce this subject to you in anticipation of the budget committee deliberations on the policy level proposal that is set in the budget. And if you read the policy level proposal that's currently in the budget, it's very generic and very general, and that was on purpose to make sure we had a chance to share with you our best thinking about this, get some feedback. So, for example, Commissioner Savas's request that we identify and clarify what kinds of measurable results we would expect from this particular investment of effort, a perfectly appropriate thing for us to plan for and prepare for as we get into budget deliberations over the actual policy level proposal. And we're not asking the board today to necessarily weigh in on a formal decision about the package as it's presently sit, but get your thinking about it and also share it with the public as well. One point to be clear about is that the two sources of revenues, the state collections and the local collections, have different requirements affiliated with them. The state law was changed, so there is not a particular restriction on the use of those state dollars. They look like general fund dollars and actually could be put to any purpose that the Board of County Commissioners and the Budget Committee thought might be appropriate as far as county activities and practices. The local collections that were the voter-approved collections are very specifically targeted to code enforcement, law enforcement, treatment and prevention, which is what kind of drove us to bring this collection of very astute and talented individuals to work jointly together on trying to put together. I know.
Hey, Don, you need to get a lid on this so we can get this.
I'm working on it. But the idea here is to have folks working together to put together a proposal that has us talking and communicating with each other about the different roles and responsibilities we have in this to do a better job for our citizens out there. And so we, in approaching this too, said with the state collections that we thought it would be appropriate to bring to you a package that presumed that those state collections would also be used in the same way that we use the dedicated local collections for. So this is intended as food for thought. I really appreciate the feedback that we're getting. It also sounds like there may be some need sometime in the future to be talking about other sort of larger policy issues with respect to things like moratoriums and other topics related to this. We can certainly plan for that. The issue about the fees for or penalties is another topic to take up as well in the future. But I think we've gotten some really good feedback. I know, Jim, you wanted to make sure there was an opportunity for the public to be.
Yes. I just want to add a couple of things. One thing is we did commit to spending the state money in this way. The other is that this is a long, been talked about it for years, is a business license. If an individual in the county wanted to find out if somebody was illegal or legal, they could log on to the county website and see a business license. And this has to do with all kinds of businesses. So I think we really need to start talking about that. So thank you. One of you should leave so we can get a mic to the citizens. So if somebody'd like to make comment, limit your time to just a couple of minutes. Mayor?
I think we should start.
Welcome.
Doug Neely, and we've both been in the Oregon City together, which educates on youth and prevention activities in the city of Oregon City. We really appreciate the effort that you're going through at this very early stage in terms of how to figure out those monies. First of all, I want to tell a story. That's about me. I have a daughter who became a heroin addict. The marijuana was the gateway for her. We lost complete control of her. In terms of setting by example, we were good examples of not using drugs. The point is, what turned her around was ultimately the man who she was living with and supplying her with drugs slit a hitchhiker's throat. You have to set up barriers. You may not know how effective your money is directed towards trying to set up those barriers are. We need to set up barriers. The other point I was going to make is that, and I'm sorry I didn't look up the statistics, but Oregon City Together has been doing surveys of middle school and high school perceptions of students. There was a dramatic increase in middle school students who thought there was no problem to marijuana use. And it was a dramatic increase over a 2-year period after it became legalized. So the actual legalization made the perception of youth think, there's no problem. Now, the revenues the county's going to get and the revenues that the cities are going to get, the school districts don't get any revenues from the sales. And I would encourage you, as you think about your activities in terms of enforcement and so forth, is how can you work with the school districts in terms of education programs and so forth. I think that's a very important thing. And that's all I'll need to say at this point.
I want to comment that we are actually meeting with the school district leadership and have been discussing this issue specifically.
Do you have a model curriculum that you are interested in seeing in the schools?
Well, of course, we were exposed when we were kids to people with lung cancer and what the effect of smoking was.
I'm just curious if one's
but
been
no,
developed
I,
if it's
I,
out there.
I'm not an educator, and okay. No.
Or do you know of one?
I don't.
Well, if you do, keep me posted.
Well, our Drive to Zero program is fairly effective, and the right person in the schools really does make a difference. So that's the kind of program I'd like to see. Go ahead. Introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm Paige Hurt, and I am the program director for Oregon City Together, but I think more importantly, I'm a parent. I have three boys who have grown up in Clackamas County in Oregon City, and it's a worry, right? Echoing what Doug said, perception of harm is decreasing, right? So youth at both the 11th grade, 8th grade, 6th grade levels, when we look at, and we can happily provide you with specific data, their perception of harm, so this isn't a worry for them, and so use is starting to skyrocket in our communities, and so that's a huge concern. When you talk about education, there are a few programs out there. One is through Clear Alliance, and they specifically focus on marijuana reduction and education, but there's some others out there that are really useful. We know that the cost for a gram of marijuana right now is about $3, and it's incredibly cheap, and that the supply is there's
demand.
Much more, exceeds the demand, and so that's a concern about, who does that get into the hands of. It was mentioned by Richard Swift about the brain development, and that's really our focus for youth, that they understand that it's not an either or, and I work with the juvenile department in a few capacities, and a lot of it's around educating youth, and the youth there tell me often, I wouldn't go drink because I see my friends drink and they look stupid, right? So I'd much rather go use marijuana because it's really not that harmful, and you know, I don't want to look like an idiot like my friends. And my conversation with them and the parents is that it doesn't need to be an either or. They're both not okay. And they're not okay for the developing brain. And the level of content when we talk about the dabs, the oils, all of the concentrates is near 100%. When you go back to what it was years ago when, you know, Woodstock and all of that, it's like 3 and 5%. So it's apples and oranges. And our youth right now are lab rats, and it's really concerning.
Also very concerned about youth suicide rate. I mean, in eighth graders, I was shocked when I heard the rate. I can't remember it offhand, but it was incredibly high.
Yes.
I mean, when you think back when you were in the eighth grade, I never knew anyone who committed suicide, but I'm sure there were. But, okay, well, thank you.
Yep. Oregon sits about 30% above the national average for suicide rates. Yeah. It's really,
Go ahead. A couple people come on up. Shirley, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
You want me to start, or would you like to start?
So I just honestly want to commend you as a commission for taking on this conversation. It's very much appreciated by citizens who are being extremely impacted. And I just want to make just about 6 points. You made the notation that there's 329 applications in Clackamas County that have been processed. What I would like to bring to your attention is there's over 525 that have been applied for, and this includes the multi-site locations as well. So that is a significant number coming into our county. So Commissioner Savas, I really appreciate your comments about the opt-out and having that as a possible option. And Chair Bernard, I also echo your concerns about if you opt out, you lose the money that you would need to support a neighborhood livability project. So, but here's my question to you is that if you're going to grandfather in all existing locations, then I think the state has a liability and a responsibility to fund the existing tax money into those ones that you're grandfathering in and kind of work a little deal with them about that topic. And, you know, when we talk about marijuana being new to the process, as Dan mentioned, marijuana isn't new. It's been in our communities for a long time, and they've been regulating themselves for a long time. And from my view, they did a better job as a black market than they're doing in many cases as a so-called regulated market, and that is what's new. And there are significant loopholes in the enforcement issues, as you suggest, Commissioner Humbertson, and not only from a local land use issue and code enforcement issue, it is a significant impact. There were 98 code violations in this county that code enforcement is trying to solve. And with that, I'd like to end with the fact that the Neighborhood Livability Project is awesome. And I've worked with some of the members on the team before, the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office and the District Attorney's Office, on our program up at Mount Hood, but there are many loopholes in marijuana in our marijuana program for this state. And what the NLP does basically is addresses them, identifies them, works on them, works as a team to solve them, and then moves ahead, which is something we aren't doing right now. All departments are working in silos, including the Oregon Health Authority and the Oregon Liquor License Commission, who needs to be at that table to help solve this. So, again, I echo and thank you for having this conversation.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Abigail Wells, and I'm with Vibrant Future Coalition, as well as Northwest Family Services. Vibrant Future Coalition. So we're a drug-free communities, federally funded coalition, and we work in the North Clackamas area, similar to Oregon City Together, and there's about 5 or 6 other coalitions in Clackamas County that have been doing work here for a long time in regards to substance abuse prevention. I'm also here as someone who's in recovery, so I've experienced firsthand the spectrum of services and the spectrum of needs for substance abuse disorders. I'm the middle of five kids who all of us have had substance abuse issues, and I'm the only one in recovery. All of us started out with marijuana use in very young age. So a big reason I'm here today is to talk about the power of prevention and really putting dollars where it makes sense, which is before the fact, uphill, upstream, before it gets to this other problem. And of course, collaborating as well. We work, the coalitions in the area work with a variety of partners. We work with the Sheriff's Office. We work with Milwaukee City Council. We work with Fred Meyers, Karma Yoga, Milwaukee Christian, the churches. We work with Pacific Detox and Oregon Trail Recovery, and we all come together to approach this in a collaborative way. The prevention of today is not the prevention of when I was young or when you guys were young. It's not just education. Education is a very small component of what we do. We work through an evidence-based seven strategies for community change. That includes everything from providing information, building skills, offering outlets to youth, helping youth with advocacy efforts, providing support. We enhance access and reduce barriers. That means involving cultural sensitivity. We look at equity and what that looks like when it comes to marijuana and how these things affect disproportionately affect communities of color. The entire time we use a strategic process. So we do, we create an action plan based off of a logic model, which is all based on data through the strategic prevention framework. And we also do evaluation. We have a lot of successful outcomes. If you look at coalitions in general, the outcomes of youth usage and youth perception of harm have all decreased in the areas where there's coalitions. So the idea of health, housing, and human services is that they intend to give out these community grants and community opportunities to apply for money. We're about to lose funding. The coalitions in the area, two of us are up for end of year funding here in the end of September. So this money would really help us do a lot that we've already done. We work with retail marijuana outlets to put safety stations in their outlets with Stumptown Cannabis have been partners at the table. We work on compliance checks. The recent compliance checks that failed at 60% in Portland, we were proactive and sent education and information and infographics to the retail stores. Yeah, so basically what I'm saying is we have a comprehensive approach and we address all of the elements that you guys have kind of been talking about here. So just to kind of consider that when you're making your decision.
All right. Well, thank you all very much. We'll be talking more about this during the budget process. Well, we're a little over time now, but okay.
Oh, we are? Because I thought it had 11:30 on my calendar.
Oh, did you? Oh, I'm sorry.
I have some follow-up comments. So.
Well, we do have some more citizens.
But we have another citizen. So.
Yeah. Anyone else? Okay, great.
Well, good morning, commissioners. My name is Steve Chinell, and I know all you are thinking, we knew he couldn't make it through a meeting without keeping him out, being able to keep his mouth shut, right? So I want to thank Commissioner Savas, Commissioner Fisher, Chair Bernard, and Ken Humberson for the opportunity at this meeting and everything that was presented. I want to echo what Shirley Morgan has said. It seems like every time we discuss marijuana, we're discussing recreational marijuana. And, you know, like Shirley said, there's 529 applicants. Some of them are approved in process. But let's not forget, too, that there's 3,448 medical grow licenses issued in Clackamas County as well on top of that. So when we're talking about enforcement, it's just not recreational. It's medical as well. And OHA has a whole different set of rules than OLCC, and that has been a big loophole with the sheriff's office is sheriff deputies all the way up to Sheriff Craig Roberts and Matt Ellington, they do not understand the marijuana laws, and they have turned a blind eye in educating the deputies on what those are has been a private citizen's experience. And I shouldn't have to educate the sheriff's office on what the marijuana laws are and try to get them to investigate, even though they have a medical license for that address. Doesn't mean they are growing within their standard to grow. Okay? And those are, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, the DA's office, those are prosecutable offenses. So we're just not talking about recreational. We're talking about medical facilities are a huge part of this problem that hide underneath the legalization of marijuana that grow hundreds of plants more than they're allowed, and that is prosecutable.
Yeah, see, that's the challenge that I see is that So if somebody has a license, and we're going to send a sheriff's officer or code enforcement in there to count them? I mean, I don't know how you're going to do that. That's a big task.
Well, my point is, when we're talking about the criminal aspect of this marijuana business, is we have to have educated deputies on this task force that can go into a facility and look at paperwork that owner or operator presents to them and be able to recognize whether they're within their legal limits or not, and then take steps afterwards. And that is not happening in our community. And it's been extremely frustrating.
Yeah, I see our code enforcement people, they that's kind of where they come in.
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to say is, you know, when we talk about legalization, you know, there's been several comments that have been made today about, oh, I smell marijuana extensively on this property. Well, unless they have a permit to grow outdoors, you shouldn't be smelling it, because that's supposed to be part of the regulations.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Paul.
So back when this all started, there was this basically promise or design of seed to sale that would limit the amount of grows so that we would only grow what we consumed in the state of Oregon. So that was the concept, which is almost something to laugh at today, unfortunately. Quite unfortunate that we're not doing that. And that really, from an enforcement standpoint, that's the state's responsibility. This seed to sale, or tracking how much to grow and when to issue permits, you know, we issue the lux, they issue the permit, right, or the license to grow, whether it's medical or whether it's, as I understand it, recreational. So when I said earlier, talked about, I know we're not talking about that today, but I'm going to say it again, the idea of opting out. We've got to remember there's an opportunity to opt out of any four of the categories, or all four. And it's, to me, I could understand where, you know, if we opt out of all four, that people are just going to go across the street into another county or city where it's legal and buy it. Our challenge has been, I think, where we seem to be most impacted, and I think even have a moral responsibility, is on the growing side. You know, they're going to be grandfathered in, so we're not saying no. One county alone in the state of Oregon grows enough pot for the entire state. So for us to continue to allow that, I think we just have a moral and ethical responsibility to say, you know, is our farmland really important? Is our water table really important? Are all these values really important? And I think it would send a message if we actually talked and considered that. So
Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Are you saying that we grow and more than enough marijuana for the entire state? Are you saying like Josephine County?
Josephine County.
Okay.
I think, yeah, when I said that, I had Josephine County.
Okay,
right.
Just checking.
Yeah. But so anyhow, I think, you know, we don't have to opt out of all four. We can simply opt out of the growing, because I think we're seeing the greatest cost and impact and neighborhood challenges on the growing side. So, you know, when they go out of business, if they go out of business, and they're grandfathered in, that's just one less. And over time, maybe we actually get the state. If the state doesn't step in and take control of this situation and actually make sure that we're not growing more than the state's consuming, knowing we have a black market, knowing that it's going out of state, you know, someone has to do something. And I'm just kind of concerned. And I would like to get some kind of a cost. The question they couldn't answer: what's that costing us today, currently? How much staff resources are we spending today as a result of Measure 91? And all our efforts to try to regulate it.
Did you have any? Okay.
Yeah, I have a question. This is for our attorney's offices. When somebody gets a business license for a restaurant, if I understand it correctly, the health inspector can go in there at any time and inspect their restaurant. Is that not the case?
Yeah, but that's a different than a business.
Well,
that's different.
Well, the reason I'm asking the question is, since there's
anybody
always
else want to come up here, because
I need a little help. I'm just trying to figure out something. So
that's good. Keep going with
that. Yeah.
You're
so,
on to something here.
In other words, there are businesses such as restaurants where, as a condition of licensing, they get inspected, and they don't have to be warned or anything else. You can come on the property and you can inspect and make sure that they're doing things through the health department healthily. Is it possible for us to do something like that with marijuana? That is a condition of licensing, whether it's for any aspect of it, from growing all the way through processing,
Is that something that can be done legally? And if so, I mean, you may not be able to answer it directly right now, but I'd be interested in knowing that, because it might solve some of the problem that the Sheriff's Department has in terms of access to the property without violating somebody's rights. Mm-hmm. And I get that people have civil rights, and as they should. But since they're doing business, and at the like any business, you know, licensed by either local or state government, there are conditions for doing business. If you have a restaurant, you serve everyone. You don't have the option to discriminate based on race, religion, nationality, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there are precedents for conditions for licensing of businesses, and I'm just wondering if that is something that we could do.
In cities, we license businesses, but we don't license them to serve food. We license the business, and we don't check to make sure they're serving the food properly. That's different. The health department licensed them to serve food. Stephen.
It would be consent by the landowner, the property owner, the business owner, to allow government officials onto the property at reasonable times in a reasonable manner to inspect for compliance with conditions that would have been imposed in a government approval process. It would not be consent for the sheriff's office. That would be separate. If we're issuing permits, land use, business license, we could have as a condition of approval that the applicant hereby consents to allow code enforcement, county council, DTD, access to the property, reasonable time, place, manner, to inspect for compliance. Yes, you could do that.
So then if they were on the property legally and discovered that something was in fact illegal, enforceable under felony law, they could notify the sheriff's department, could they not?
You could. There might be a variety of other criminal law implications associated with that. You are on site to look to see whether or not they have their sound barriers and their noise barriers and their smell barriers in place, and you see a criminal activity of unrelated type. There might be motions to suppress that Chris Owens and his office would have to deal with as well. So there's no guarantee that you could pass that on, but you certainly could try.
That's just my question. It might be something worth taking a look at.
So the fire department, for example, fire departments, for example, can go into a business and do a fire inspection, and you can't stop them. You can try, but they'll come back with a warrant if you don't, as I understand it, if you deny them.
But in an agricultural building where you're doing processing of extracts, the fire department can't actually approve the equipment being used inside the building.
Yeah.
They can approve. Building inspectors can approve the electrical, the plumbing, et cetera, up to the building, but the equipment used for processing inside the building, which has flammable potential, the fire department doesn't get to inspect.
Yeah, they
at
can.
At this point in time,
they can inspect electrical and plumbing in a building, but beyond that, the fire department. Yeah, because we wanted to do that. We wanted the fire department to figure out how we could get in there and do that kind of stuff. But
isn't that, so? Let me make sure I'm clear about that. I thought that the under the fire code, the fire marshal has the authority to. And in fact, the fire code actually says shall inspect or cause to be inspected on a regular basis for fire-related matters, including the nature of the access, the maintenance of the premises.
Not on agricultural.
Not on agricultural. Okay.
We remember.
We checked on that 6 months ago.
We tried to figure out a way to make that happen, but we couldn't.
Because the concern there was the use of explosive chemicals, like propane, butane, that sort of thing, in the processing of extracts. And the concern was the public safety aspect of it.
Well, the business license idea was so we knew where they were, who they were, whether they were licensed. So if you did let's say a marijuana grow business, you would put on it, I'm medical or I'm such and such, and any citizen could log onto the county website and see, well, they have a license. Could be indoor grow, outdoor grow. So if somebody all those things. But that also applies to other businesses. I mean, we've been told over and over again, you can't specifically, you know, do that just for marijuana businesses. But my also, on my concern was like the fire marshal in my business, when I had white gas, for example, I used to sell, eventually they would come and they would say, well, you've got too much white gas. You have that kind of thing in a marijuana grow. But that's, we're talking agricultural. We have industrial buildings where the fire marshal can come in within, you know, not on farmland, and they can say, well, you're using a process that's too dangerous. You need fire sprinkler system or fire suppression things. So those kind of things.
Brief follow-up. So if we were to say we're going to do business licenses in Clackamas County, all businesses in Clackamas County, I'm assuming that's outside the cities, but just in the county. Is that something we could do and require all businesses that are currently in business in Clackamas County?
Yes.
To begin to do on such and such a date? Is that legal? Yes. It wouldn't be grandfathered in without a business license?
If the purpose of the licensing scheme is to just inventory existing businesses for contact information as opposed to approval and denial, then I believe, yes, you would be able to get compliance from all businesses operating within unincorporated. Within incorporated cities, they'd have to consent.
Thank you.
And I'll add just that many of the prohibitions against grandfathering are land use specific. And so when we talk about, you know, not being able to claw back some of these allowances that have been permits issued, those are land use regulations specific. And so business licenses are a different exercise of our police power.
So one more thing to that real quick.
Okay.
Discussions and topics and questions you've raised today are topics and discussions that we have discussed in the past, and it's just a dialogue around when you join the board. And so I'm going to go back to the discussion about farm growing and the grow operations. It's just, from a land use perspective, a lot of the ability to regulate that component were dictated on the fact the state called it a farm use. So we had limited ability. I mean, you have limited ability to kind of segment that area of the industry off and treat it differently than other areas of the industry. Also, we had to talk about fines. We had to talk about extensive fines because the board at that particular point in time said, you know what, I want to elevate these fines. And we have proposals that come forward, and we discussed the merit of that. And we can share that information with you.
Yeah, the other thing you can do on business licenses is that you can charge more for specific businesses. At least in other states you can. I'm not positive about Oregon. For example, an Airbnb license in one state might be $900. A regular business license might be $100. So one of the things you could do is a marijuana business, a grow or a sales, you could price those. And that gives you more revenue. Frankly, I think that the fine should be, a lot of builders will come down and cut all the trees down because they only have to pay $1,000 fine per tree. I don't know what it is. You know. And we had that in Milwaukee. The guy just cut down all the trees. And then, well, I'm just add that to the price of the house. And that's kind of how you have to treat this. You make it a $900 business license for specific categories, and you can categorize it. Is there anything wrong with that?
I think we could present something along those lines.
Okay, great.
I have to be a little bit vague because I'm not entirely sure.
I know.
your details.
Good call.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any additional questions, comments? Well, thank you very much again. Appreciate it. Thank you, citizens, for attending.
Well, we hashed it out.